I remember every day getting home from school and watching Goosebumps. The R.L. Stine series and books that came out around 95 lasted four seasons until around 1998, 99, somewhere in that era. Now we have the Goosebumps movie with Jack Black, and we also have Goosebumps 2. I haven't seen that one yet, but I kind of liked the first one. It reminded me and took me back to when I was a child watching those shows. Not to mention I've read probably most to close to all these books. Goosebumps is amazing. It's fun, and it's great for kids. I think having that genre of horror and imagination to understand that needs to go along with it. The understanding that these books are not meant to just be scary and stimulate the imagination. It's also to know that this is how creation works. And our minds often think of things in the dark, the things unknown. And because our minds have a stronger imagination when we're a child, because we're free to exercise it, we tend to allow it to run away with our thoughts. And those thoughts become a reality. So what are phobias and fears, and how does it work in the brain? I mean, they're irrational and persistent. And I mean, you could have common phobias that include spiders, snakes, birds, clowns, bridges, and blood. I mean, I can relate with some of those. Phobias are object specific, and they do tend to focus on things that are generally considered moderately, if not profoundly, unpleasant, even for those who do not have phobias. There are a few curious exceptions in which some stereotypical phobia triggers are not widely considered to be unpleasant. For example, clown phobia is fairly common, and at the same time, clowns are generally considered to be entertaining characters. When I was a child, I was like, yeah, probably up till I was about the age of 10 or 11, I was staying at my grandparents' house. I don't think they had this room for very long, but they had an office room, which became an office later, full of clowns. And there would be a nightlight on in the room, so you had just a little bit of light. And that little bit of light was enough to animate all the clowns in the room. And I have no doubt in my mind that I had an experience of supernatural and paranormal proportions. I saw the clown's heads move. I saw one go right off a picture. And I swear I would see shadows creep in, from the nightlight. And what I realized when I got older was that there is a thing called sleep paralysis. And this is when you are in between consciousness and unconsciousness of your dream state or REM sleep. And what can happen is you're very widely awake and conscious, much like you are now, but you're sitting there sleeping and you're still. You can't move. You feel paralyzed. And in those moments, you can have the most vivid dreams that appear like reality. My last one that I had, I was waking up. I got up out of my bed and everything feels normal. I get up out of my bed, I go and open the blinds, and Jason is standing outside my window. And then I woke up in a panic with my heart racing and realized I had just experienced sleep paralysis again. Now, this was something that I realized had been happening since I was a child. I had seen red eyes in my room. I had seen creatures and things, and I had experiences where I felt like something was touching me, and it just wasn't like my own foot or anything weird like that. So what are these fears like? What happens in our brain that causes all this fright? For example, when you enter a haunted house during Halloween season, anticipating a ghoul jumping out at you and knowing it isn't really a threat might be able to allow you to quickly relabel the experience. In contrast, if you were walking in a dark alley at night and a stranger began chasing you, both your emotional and thinking areas of the brain would be in agreement that the situation is dangerous and it's time to flee. But how does your brain do this? Fear reaction starts in the brain and spreads through the body to make adjustments for the best defense or flight reaction. The fear response starts in a region of the brain called the amygdala. This almond-shaped set of nuclei in the temporal lobe of the brain is dedicated to detecting the emotional salience of the stimuli, how much something stands out to us. For example, the amygdala activates whenever we see a human face with an emotion. This reaction is more pronounced with anger and fear. A threat stimulus, such as the sight of a predator, triggers a fear response in the amygdala, which activates areas involved in preparation for motor functions involved in fight or flight. It also triggers the release of stress hormones and the sympathetic nervous system. This leads to bodily changes that prepare us to be more efficient in a danger. The brain becomes hyper alert, pupils dilate, the bronchi dilate, and breathing accelerates. Heart rate and blood pressure rise. Blood flow and stream of glucose to the skeletal muscles increase. Organs not vital in survival, such as the gastrointestinal system, slow down. Which is probably why you might experience less gas during those times. A part of the brain called the hippocampus is closely connected with the amygdala. The hippocampus and prefrontal cortex help the brain interpret the perceived threat. For instance, seeing a lion in the wild can trigger a strong fear reaction, but the response to a view of the same lion at a zoo is more of curiosity and thinking that the lion is cute. This is because the hippocampus and the frontal cortex process contextual information and inhibitory pathways dampen the amygdala fear response and its downstream results. Basically, our thinking circuitry of brain reassures our emotional areas that we are, in fact, okay. Similar to other animals, we often learn fear through personal experiences, such as being attacked by an aggressive dog or observing other humans being attacked by aggressive dogs. Now, I've been bit by a few of them, and it wasn't too aggressive. It wasn't anything that you would see from an undomesticated dog or anything weird like that. It was more in play, and then sometimes just, a dog that had fear itself of why I was there. And it's very rare, but mostly those kind of bites were from Chihuahuas. The littlest dog tends to be the most aggressive. And I think it's the way we treat it, that it has reason to fear, so we pick it up. Whereas your larger canines, we tend to treat them as gentle giants. Perhaps if we treated Chihuahuas with that same respect, they may not be so aggressive. Anyways, however, an evolutionary, unique, and fascinating way of learning in humans is through instruction. We learn from spoken words or written notes. If a sign says the dog is dangerous, proximity to the dog will trigger a fear response. We learn safety in a similar fashion, experiencing a domesticated dog, observing other people safely interact with that dog, or reading a sign that the dog is friendly. Fear creates distraction, which can be a positive experience. When something scary happens in that moment, we are on high alert and not preoccupied with other things that might be in our mind. Getting in trouble at work, worrying about a big test the next day, which brings us to here and now. While each of these factors, context, distraction, social learning, have potential to influence the way we experience fear, a common theme that connects all of them is our sense of control. When we are able to recognize what is and isn't a real threat, relabel and experience and enjoy the thrill of that moment, we are ultimately at a place where we feel in control. That perception of control is vital to how we experience and respond to fear. When we overcome the initial fight or flight rush, we are often left feeling satisfied, reassured of our safety, and more confident in our ability to confront the things that initially scared us. One of the best ways we can defeat our fears is by learning about it, why we are afraid, what it is that we were afraid of, and is there really anything to fear? Now let's change gears. I have Megan here from Wisconsin in a little town at Chippewa Falls, which is a hometown of mine. So if you can make the connections there, you can tell that this is my sister. She says that she has a fear of parasites taking over hosts. I agree. I could see that happening. If you haven't seen the movie Headhunter, which is very violent, gruesome, brutal, and horrific, check it out. It's all about a parasite that is a monster. And, well, I'm not going to spoil the movie for you. It's insane. And you don't actually see the violence. So don't worry too much about the stuff that goes on. You're just going to see a lot of the after effects. And it's a very interesting take on such a gruesome movie. But honestly, it's very immersive. There's maybe one page of lines in the whole movie. And it's great. It's like an hour and 10 minutes. Worth the watch. It was one of those it stands alone. It's a great movie. Anyways, check that one out. I think you'll appreciate the parasites taking over hosts in that one. Or Stephen King's Dreamcatcher. Wait, pretty sure that's Stephen King. If I'm wrong, yeah, I don't mean to be. But anyways, the tiny hole phobia. Yeah, the tiny hole phobia is a real thing, which is known as trypophobia, fear of holes. That's a real thing. I had someone else actually write in and say they had a similar fear. So I'll see if I can find that. But yeah, that was a very interesting one. Kind of hilarious to hear about how people are afraid of holes, especially tiny ones. I can understand that. Sometimes I walk over some of these holes and I expect a snake or some sort of venomous creature to just come out and sting me. And I'm like, I have shoes on, but for some reason, I still step on them. I just want to test if my fear is correct. Things underwater freak you out, like buoys. Yes, I remember being out in the lakes and going by the buoys from time to time. For some reason, just the fact that it goes down to the bottom or in that area is almost like a fish at a bobber or something. It's like a signal for all things that I think could be under the water. Like, hey, gather up here. Here's the rally point. And yeah, it freaks me out. Actually, I used to have a fear of what's under the water all the time. And I used to just have to tell myself, nothing's going to happen. If it does, I'm not going to see it. So I don't have time to panic. At least I hope. But then something jumps out of the water. It's huge. And yeah, that typically freaks me out. I had one time I was out in the ocean and everybody else was kind of in on shore and I went out and I think I was on a surfboard this day. I usually go out on a boogie board, it was a church retreat type thing. And I go out there and the guy says, yeah, there's about 300 sharks down below. They're doing this feeding thing throughout. It's like a certain season when the water gets to be a certain temperature, and it was very interesting. So like any other natural instinct, I took the next wave in, and because there happened to be one pretty quickly, and just rode it in. And I never went back out that day. But I've always had a fear of things lurking below the surface of the water. You might find this movie interesting, Megan, the Shallows. It's surprisingly under crime and thrillers. I don't know if it's really a crime. I guess there is a little bit in there. But it stars Blake Lively, and she gets secluded on a beach, and she finds herself on the feeding ground of a great white shark. And through this, she is stranded only 200 yards from shore. And this movie I thought was going to be just dumb and stupid in the beginning. It actually turns out to be a very smart movie. And it takes place on a ocean buoy. And I think you will like it. And it gets kind of really cool and heroic and MacGyverish towards the end. So definitely check it out if you haven't. And it definitely got the approval of, you know, myself, of just one of those movies that I could watch over and over because of how smart it ended up. And we have a few that wrote in from Kansas. I have a girlfriend out in Kansas. And she asked some of her coworkers, and then I have some friends too. Whitney from Kansas wrote in and said she has a fear of spiders. Yes, spiders are creepy. And you said one other leg while you were in the shower, and ever since then you have been on high alert. Yeah, I had a spider on my floor the other day. And ever since then I have been checking my room. I also had one on my wall, and I'm just like always checking. I'm like, how is my perimeter breached? And I usually feel like I have a pretty solid, tight perimeter in my room. Although now I have so many things, I'm like, I just want to have nothing in my room at all but my bed. so I can see if there's like, you know, arachnids or bugs or anything weird anywhere. And yeah, arachnophobia is definitely one that is up on my list. I also take photos of spiders, and that is probably the scariest thing I do. You don't have to get that close to them, but in order to get the detail and everything, you do have to get quite comfortable being within a proximity of them that is very close. You wrote that you put peppermint oil in or around your areas where the bugs are, and apparently they don't like it. Well, I drink peppermint coffee. It is oozing out of my pores. And quite honestly, it is delicious. So I have a feeling that the spiders might think it's delicious as well. What are your thoughts? Please enter them in the comment section below. There are a few more from Kansas, as my girlfriend asked some of her colleagues, which I think was really nice of her. And so one of them was xylophobia, which is putting, I think it's like wood tongue depressors or ice cream sticks between your teeth. I don't know why that would be a phobia, but I could see that more as it is a stimulant that causes you to want to gag or any of the above. Everyone's skin crawls when they hear nails on a chalkboard. This is, I can't remember what it's called. Hold on a second here. Mysophonia, which is where the nails on the chalkboard or the hatred of sounds comes from. Very interesting phobia there. And yes, I think I can agree with everybody that when that's about to happen, I cringe and shake and shiver and my spine is tingling to not want to hear that sound or endure it for any extent or period of time. And then there's my friend Kat from the Jersey Islands. She says she is afraid of vomiting, which is kind of an interesting one. And I think it's kind of common. Let me see if I can find out what it's called. Emetophobia, which is an intense, irrational fear of vomiting, including fear of feeling nausea, seeing or hearing another person vomit, or seeing vomitous things itself. Kat, thank you for sharing your fears and phobias. I think that was a very good one. It's different. And yes, I agree. I tend to also get a little bit anxiety and feel kind of a panic attack when it's about to happen. And I can feel my mouth watering up like, here it comes. It's happening. There's no way I can stop it. And then, yeah, I actually end up throwing up sometimes. But I haven't done that in a while. And now when I do, I just try to let it happen. I try to make it to the bathroom first, so at least it's somewhere easy to clean up. Because if I try to clean up vomit, I vomit again. And unfortunately, that just isn't something that goes away for me. A few of you wrote in and said you have a fear of death, of losing loved ones, and that is known as it kind of looks like Thanos, thanatophobia, which is a fear of death, or necrophobia is the abnormal fear of dead things. Example are corpses, as well as things like coffins and tombstones. But I would agree and say that I have a similar fear. I don't know if it's a phobia. I don't know that it is beyond rational thought or thinking. But I mean, I do fear losing people close to me, especially, you know, just for the sake of that it can happen out of nowhere. And that to me is kind of more what it could be. That's the stuff that's harder, is when it's not expected. And I know that death is natural, and there's a natural aspect to death. In other words, like you die naturally when you're older, or, you know, due to cancer or other things. And when it's kind of expected, I think it's easier. When it's unexpected and something just happens out of nowhere, it becomes very damaging and traumatizing. And that can last for a very long time. So, yeah, definitely having those fears and everything addressed, something like that, and having a good, healthy perspective on it can be very good for us. Thank you, Taylor, for submitting that one. And my best friend, Wally from Menifee, thank you for submitting your fear and phobia. Thank you guys for that. That, yeah, those are some really interesting phobias and fears. What else is out there? What other fears are there? Let's go through the list real quick of just some interesting ones that I found were kind of interesting. My friend Neil, also from Menifee, said he had a fear of heights, and that's acrophobia. There's aerophobia, which is a fear of flying. Bacteriophobia, which is a fear of bacteria. Barophobia is a fear of gravity. I don't know why you would have a fear of gravity. I would more or less have a fear of a lack of it. Bathymophobia, fear of stairs or steep slopes. There's bactrophobia, fear of amphibians. Bibliophobia is a fear of books. And then there's botanophobia, which is a fear of plants. Chromophobia is a fear of clocks. I'm sorry, chromophobia is a fear of colors, and chronometrophobia is a fear of clocks. Chronophobia is a fear of time, and claustrophobia is a fear of confined spaces. Now, I experienced that one a bit more personally. When it's hot and you're in a small space, I can definitely feel the walls closing in. That's why when I'm in a car in the mid of winter, I don't like the heaters on blasting. They can be on and they can warm me up, but as soon as it gets hot in the car, turn that sucker down. For most of these fears, I think you wouldn't have much option to escape them. Dendrophobia is a fear of trees. Dentophobia is a fear of dentists. That one is very realistic. I think a lot of people have that one, to be honest. Dermatophobia is a fear of houses. Well, I have no idea what you're living in then, if not a house or something similar. Oh, I can't say this one. God damn it. Echophobia, fear of the home. Sorry, that was really annoying. Echophobia is what I wanted to keep saying, and it's echophobia. That was a hard one. Let's see here. Genophobia. Genophobia. Fear of knees. I don't know how you have a fear of knees. You have to have knees. They're very versatile and useful. There's haphophobia, fear of touch. Heliophobia, fear of the sun. These are very interesting things. And actually, the fear of the sun one was represented in Bench Warmers. It's an older movie, and that one had a guy in there that was afraid of the sun. Thought it was literally trying to hurt him. It was kind of funny. That was way back when. Leucophobia, fear of the color white. Megalophobia, fear of large things. There's the fear of the color black, melanophobia. Microphobia, fear of small things. Ophidiophobia, which is a fear of snakes, and ornithophobia. Oh my gosh, these are so hard to pronounce. Is a fear of birds. Ornithophobia. There's philematophobia, which is a fear of kissing. Phobophobia, which is a fear of phobias. That kind of sums it all up, I think. You know, if you have a fear of phobias, you have a phobia for phobias. Trypophobia is the fear of holes, which we talked about. And trypanophobia is a fear of needles and injections. That one also seems to be a very common one. No one likes to get pricked, especially by the pros. There's venestrophobia, which is a fear of beautiful women. I don't know why. I think that has to do more with insecurity. I almost don't know if that's a real phobia, but I guess it could be. There's wiccophobia, which is fear of witches and witchcraft. And zoophobia, which is a fear of animals. That's right, that cuddly looking panda bear in behind the glass is a vicious monster that you should fear and run away from. Yeah, actually, no, it's still a wild animal. They're very strong. Don't fuck with it. So, what are your irrational fears and phobias? Be part of the discussion on Facebook, Stitcher, and any other platform that you find my podcast, and get in on the conversation. Let's talk about this. Find me on Twitter at one Adam Paradox and on Instagram at the Adam Paradox. You can find me hopefully just about anywhere. If you have any questions on where to find me, go to anchor.fm, where you can find a list of all the platforms that my podcast is on, and a link, I believe, to my Facebook page where we talk all sorts of stuff about this. Now, sometimes the community is not always up and going, like it's not always a common topic, and that's fine. Most of my podcast topics are very controversial and hard to get in on because it incites a lot of emotions, and that's kind of the idea. But guys, I'm working on some things to help with transitioning from religion to a regular world and vice versa. And I'm also working on kind of just some, you know, helpful tools and methods that can help you through your day and live in a more positive light. On top of that, this podcast was to be a little bit untraditional, a little bit more fun, give you a little bit of some science behind the brain and why it reacts the way it does in lieu of Halloween coming up in the next week. Next week, there will not be a podcast, most likely. I have a lot of plans and stuff going on. I'm going to be very busy. And, yeah, so if you want to find me, if you want to be a guest on the show or hit me up and, you know, I got time before the 30th, to do another podcast, or at least the recording, and then I'll release it later. But this is the one for Halloween. Thanks again for listening. Find me on all the social media platforms. If you want your business, plugged into this podcast, hit me up on any of those social media sites as well. Definitely willing to do a, you know, ad and plug and everything for you there. We have thousands of listeners and thousands of listens. Be glad to support your cause. Thanks again for listening. This is your host.